All right, welcome to the podcast. I'm Richard McClain.
And I am Eric Allen Hall.
And this is Please Leave a Message. Nobody's called into the phone number this week. We do have a phone number set up. You can call in. We've been asking people to call in with gaming stories and with the strangest thing that ever happened to you before. So we did have someone call in a couple weeks ago. He had a really good gaming story, but it got cut off. He told me not to use it and that he would call in again. So, hey, Adam, call in again. We'd like to feature your story. And anybody else, call in. And you don't have to be... You don't have to just do one of those two things that we asked for. You can call in with anything. If you've got some weird found audio that you think we'd like to feature, you can call and play it over the phone. That's fine. Or if you want to send us a message, you can email us at pleasepodcast@gmail.com. Send us an audio file or something. We can feature those too. So website news, my webcomic is still broken. So yeah, I've been down 4 months and I'm hoping that I can get up soon. Because it's kind of driving me nuts. But I am catching up on writing the story, so that's a good thing. Okay, so our guest host this week is Eric Hall.
Eric Hall.
All right, Eric, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I moved to Utah in 2001. I was employed for a long time by Verizon Wireless. Due to a reduction in force, I lost my job. And earlier this year, in January, I found a new job at General Dynamics, and I'm part of the census test project for 2020. I train non-Spanish foreign language speakers to answer the phone and answer respondent questions and to fill out the questionnaire online.
So are you a non-Spanish foreign language speaker?
Technically, yes. I do speak German and Spanish.
Okay.
Most of the folks that we have right now speak Russian, Mandarin, Cantonese, Korean, and Vietnamese.
All right. I had finals this week, or actually this morning, 7 a.m., and I had to turn in my video game. So we used a video game engine called Unity, and then we used something called middleware, or we used a middleware product called FMod to add sound to the video game. Now, luckily, I had already done the tutorial for that video game in another class. So I'd already done the whole tutorial. I didn't have to take the time to do that. So all I had to do was redo all the audio. So that was fun. And it was cool because the FMod allowed me to do more stuff than the built-in stuff that Unity has. Something's going on with my computer. It's not running stuff the way it used to. I probably just need a Windows reinstallation, but that's a whole week project that I just have not been willing to do. I've actually been putting it off for years at this point. Because I've got some software on there that I don't know where my registration information is. And I don't want to lose it.
Yeah.
And so I've literally just been putting off reinstalling Windows because of that. But I might be forced to. I was running a test and the processor is literally running at half the speed it's supposed to. And I don't know why. So it's killing me. Well, Eric brought some found audio for us.
I did, yes.
All right. So pick one of them and tell us what we're going to listen to here.
Okay. Why don't we start chronologically?
Okay.
And we'll go back to June of 1983. It was the last day of junior high school, end of eighth grade, and I brought a little handheld tape recorder to class, and I briefly interviewed some of my classmates.
Awesome. You pointed out somebody on it that's an author now?
Yes. My friend Glenn Hamilton. He goes professionally by Glenn Eric Hamilton. He is a mystery novel writer.
Oh, cool. So check him out.
Yeah.
And you can hear him as an eighth grade kid just being funny.
Here we are, first period. This is German class. It's about 8:45 in the morning. We just got back from staff advisors, and everyone is running around signing annuals. Not much to report, but a lot of people going in and out through Bergman's door, which is right by the wall. And I guess that I'll sign off now until second period. We are now in Science?
Yes.
All the tables are stacked up along the side.
What are you doing this time, man?
I got my disc again.
Tomorrow. You better pay it tomorrow.
Is there anything you'd like to say, Glenn?
Help! Get me out of here. I can't take it anymore. School lunches every day. Help! Get me out.
And this is the science class, and that was just Glenn Hamilton you heard. You heard it here first on...
Get me out of here. Can't you unlock these bars just for a minute? Honest, I won't kill anybody again.
Recreating his old role. And that's about it for science. We're back here again. Thank you.
Here we are in Mr. Bergman's room. It's fourth period. This is Todd Frosman. Would you like to say anything?
Yes, I'd just like to say diarrhea is hereditary. It runs in the genes. And another quote here is, if you live upside down, your feet start to curl under.
Thank you very much. This is Colleen Nelson. Would you like to say anything?
What?
Say something! You're on tape, live! But on film.
Short people are really neat once you get to og, ot, left.
Thank you very much. This is Harvey Hawks. And Steve, would you like to say anything?
No.
Yeah. What should I say?
Talk about Return of the Jedi.
Return of the Jedi. Okay. It's a totally awesome movie, and you got to see it. And I want to get a speeder bike. And everything else, and I want to get a lightsaber and cut my hair, because I need a haircut. Thank you very much.
We're still live. This is Michael Massey, the famous stupid vision player. Would you like to say anything? No. Why not? Oh, well, I guess he has no comment for us at this time. Here we go. Is there anything you'd like to say to leave for future generations, Scott?
Yeah. What future generation are you talking about? I think the world is kind of screwed up. I'm into devolving now.
Okay.
And I feel that we should all have radiation suits because if the world comes to an end, I think we should be ready for it.
Okay,
and
thank you.
We should devolve.
That was Scott Vassell, citing us with his intense wisdom and knowledge. I see another young, impatient visitor here. Would you like to say something, John?
Probably not.
This is John Shepherd. You don't want to say anything?
No.
Why not?
I have nothing to say.
Nothing to say?
Nothing to say.
All right. Well, that's okay, I guess. You don't want to say anything, that's fine. Would you like to say anything, Amy?
Sorry, that's a lie.
I don't know. Future generations, say something.
Why? Is that on tape?
Yeah, it's on tape.
For who?
Me.
Oh, hi, Eric.
Hi, Amy.
How are you?
Just great.
Let's see, what else should I say?
I don't know.
Oh, you're really good at drama.
Thank you, so are you. You're a good director.
Oh, thanks. And you're a really nice person.
Thank you, so are you. See you in drama.
Bye.
And this concludes the... This concludes fourth period, Bergman. We're signing off.
That was great. I love finding that kind of stuff. It's just kind of funny to think about how we were back then. That brought back junior high memories for me. I'm going to have to search it out and probably feature it on the podcast. My friends, as a class project for English, we did our own parody version of Macbeth. And we went and spent a whole Saturday filming it at my friend's house. And I think a couple of my friends had written the story, but we were really doing guerrilla style filmmaking and just kind of shooting off the cuff and kind of making stuff up as we went at the same time. So I know I've got that around here somewhere. I bet there's some good audio in that.
I made a few fan films years ago using my friends as actors, parodies of The X-Files and of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh, nice. I love doing that kind of stuff. I used to do it a lot, especially in like junior high and high school. I had a friend that was, he's a comic book artist. I had him on the show. He was talking about his art philosophies, and it was really interesting because when he said this, it was like revelatory to me. I was like, wait a minute, that's exactly how I am too. But I didn't realize it till he said it. He works in this place with all these great artists. He's like surrounded by amazing artists. And he noticed that when it comes to their art, they're always looking to improve their craft. They're always looking for new techniques, new ways to do things, new ways to get better at the art itself. And he never felt that kind of drive. Like he's good at art. He's better than I am. He's always been better than I am. He said his drive has always been to tell stories. And that's what we did. That's why we did animation together. Salt Lake Community College back in like 2000, 2002. And we used to make films together. So he was always trying to find a way to tell his stories, and he would try different mediums, but he always ends up coming back to comics.
It's a great art form.
It's a fantastic art form. I love it. But I noticed that when he said that, I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like that too. I'm always around these other artists. I love to draw, but I don't feel that drive to like, I like to get better. It's not that I don't. It's just that that's not what drives me.
I completely understand that. As a cosplayer, I love being able to improve on a costume, make it better. I love collaborating with other cosplayers to do group projects. So I understand that.
Okay. Tell me about that. How'd you get into cosplay?
As I was growing up in Seattle, my mom was involved with the Seattle Civic Light Opera. And she was in Fiddler on the Roof and Carousel and some other productions. And I tagged along. I was, kid number three. And so I kind of grew up around acting and costumes and stage makeup. As I got older, I still really enjoyed doing that type of thing. I've done a couple fan films with my friends as actors. I've always loved Halloween. And I went to my first Star Trek convention in Seattle in 1992. And I loved it. It was fantastic to see people recreating Klingons and Andorians and other aliens that I'd kind of grown up with. After that, Next Generation was really kind of in its prime at the time. And I spot an inexpensive Halloween Mr. Data outfit. And I put white makeup on, I slicked my hair back, and I started cosplaying as Mr. Data. After that, I was intrigued by the Borg episode, so I started to put together a Borg costume. And it's just snowballed from there as I have branched out from Star Trek into superhero costuming and into steampunk and into anime and just all the different types of cosplay expressions there are.
Awesome. I have a feeling that one or two or possibly all three of my kids will end up as cosplayers because they already do it. Like they'll watch a show or movie or something, and then they'll go up and just with whatever they can find in their bedrooms, they throw something together. And I'm so-and-so,
Proud dad moment. My kids have come off and on to the Star Trek convention with me. Last year, my daughter, who's 11, asked me to make her a Borg costume. And so I did, started to work on it. Her brother wanted one, her other brother wanted one, and then I made one for the youngest. And so last year, we all went as Borg to the Star Trek convention and just had a ton of fun. And later last year, around Halloween time, my daughter wanted to make a Poison Ivy costume. So I helped her with that. My oldest son, I helped make a Scarecrow outfit from the Batman animated series. And then she asked for a Hawk Girl outfit. So I helped her with that. Made the cudgel with her, and she's been encouraging me to do cosplay how-to videos on my YouTube channel.
Nice.
I'm not prolific at all. I do one video maybe every 3 or 4 weeks, but it's fun to get my stuff out there.
Yeah, I've been toying with doing, like, just when I draw stuff, putting stuff up, but I'm just not quite there yet. But I'm thinking about it. I'm almost there. It was an art show. Two artists had gotten together and they were doing a show of their pieces and selling them. And I got really inspired. I haven't painted since Probably 2002 was the last time I painted anything. And I just, even though it was abstract stuff and not really my style, I was really just inspired. I'm like, I want to do this. I haven't done this in so long. So I jumped headfirst into it. I went to the hardware store. I bought the hardboard. I bought the 1x2 pieces of wood. And I built frames to support the hardboard. And I got a big old bucket of gesso, and I'm going to prepare them. And I've got 5 ideas already of things that I want to paint. So I'm getting all stoked about it. And one of the artists that was there, we bought one of her pieces. She's a friend of ours. I said, yeah, this isn't my style at all. I'm a cartoonist, but I want to paint. And she's like, do it, get 5 or 6 pieces together. We'll do a show just like this. And so I'm pretty stoked about it, actually.
It's great.
Yeah, I love doing stuff.
I've always admired people who can draw and can paint. I have no talent there. I am more of, I guess, a 3D artist. I love ceramics. Mm-hmm. I started doing hand-built pottery in junior high school, then high school, and then into college. And my favorite technique is a Japanese style called raku, where you'll fire it once to stoneware. Then you apply a low temperature glaze to it and you put it into a kiln for about an hour until it starts to glow orange. Then you take it out with metal tongs and you drop it into like a metal garbage can full of sawdust or leaves, and you put a lid on top of it and leave it for about a minute. And the clay is still burning hot, but it exhausts all the oxygen that's been trapped. So it starts to pull the oxygen out of the clay and out of the glaze, and the clay turns black. And then the glaze, depending on what you use, it turns all different metallic colors. And then you take the tongs again and you drop it into water. And if the thermal shock doesn't break the clay,
right,
at that point you've got something that's frozen in time, basically, with black clay and beautiful different glazes.
Oh, that sounds really cool. I've heard that word before, but I wasn't aware of what it was. That's pretty cool. Some of my favorite artists in high school were the guys that were in the pottery class.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I always was like, man, I kind of want to do that, but I never took that class. I probably should have. It's like, I think my senior year was all art classes.
There are a lot of community colleges pottery classes too.
Well, I'm sure UVU's got something, and I can just take a free class some semester. I've been looking for something for fall. I was going to take the advanced video game one, but I guess they only teach that in the spring. So I'm going to have to figure out what I want to do. I've also been thinking about, I've been wanting to learn guitar for years, and I found out I can do private lessons through the university for a semester. And since I don't have to pay the tuition, it's just the class fee, which it's more than the normal class fee would be, but it's way less than like going to a guitar center or something,
right,
or getting a private lesson somewhere.
Right.
And I get a whole semester of that. So I think I might do that too. We'll see. Always looking for new stuff to do. I'm never satisfied with the old. All right. This week, we have an interview with Michael Goebel. A few weeks ago, the person that I was going to interview bailed on me. So I just put a call out on Facebook. Hey, my person bailed on me. Anybody want to come record a podcast tonight? And he said, I'll do it. And so we hooked up Skype and we did an interview. And he and I share the fact that we are record collectors on a shoestring budget.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a fun interview.
All right. We call this part of the podcast I Tick. We ask everybody the same questions. We're just trying to boil down and figure out what makes a person tick.
All right.
So with us today, we have Michael Goebel. And well, tell us your name and briefly what you do.
Okay. I'm Mike Goebel, and I'm a sidle technologist, which means that it sounds more complicated than it is. But basically, I sit in front of a microscope all day long and look at cells. And if I see something that needs to be looked at by a pathologist, I send it to a pathologist. And then I move on to the next case and look at more cells. And I listen to music while I look at cells under a microscope.
Sounds like a celly life to me.
Yeah.
Sorry, I like puns.
No problem.
All right. Tell us your earliest memory.
My absolute earliest memory that I can clearly place is my 4th birthday. When I was a kid, we used to go up to my grandparents' house at Christmas time, my maternal grandparents, and they had a couple of sets of dominoes, and I just loved stacking the dominoes and making towers out of them, making them fall. Apparently, they noticed that I loved the dominoes so much that for my 4th birthday, when they came to my house, they brought me my very own little set of dominoes, and it was these Super Friends dominoes. They had pictures of the Super Friends cartoon characters, you know, Superman.
Oh, that's awesome.
Aquaman, and all those DC characters, I think. Wonder Woman, you know. They were these little red plastic dominoes with pictures of Super Friends on them. And they brought them to me in a little basket, I think. That was the present I remember getting for my fourth birthday. So that was my earliest memory. My second earliest memory was watching Return of the Jedi, first run at the Cinedome 70 Theater in Ogden. I don't remember everything that I saw in the movie, but I remember it. It was cool because my grandma worked at the theater. Actually, a pretty interesting thing about that, there's a photograph I have that I think my uncle put it up on Facebook. It's a picture of my grandma and her friend when they were working at the theater. And I took a quick look at the picture, and there in the background, in a frame, was a movie poster for Return of the Jedi, but it wasn't just any movie poster for Return of the Jedi. It was Revenge of the Jedi poster.
Oh.
It just happened to be that movie poster in that picture of my grandma when she worked at the Cinedome 70 Theater. It was like there was a piece of cinematic history just sitting there in the background with my grandma and her friend smiling at the theater in the office.
That's cool.
Yeah, it had to have been in 1983, I guess. See, my second earliest memory is much cooler than my first earliest memory. Yeah. So I had to share that one, too.
Those earliest memories are always kind of hit and miss with people. Sometimes they're really interesting. Sometimes they're really sketchy.
Yeah.
And vague. But it's a question I really enjoy. So next question, tell us a story from your childhood, something that's influenced your life, maybe something you haven't shared often.
One thing that influenced my life as a kid was my grandparents' garden. We grew tomatoes. We grew corn. I think it was like about a half acre, an acre of land behind my grandparents' house where my family lived. We grew a lot of vegetables and fruits, but especially tomatoes. And we had this big old sign that was a homemade sign, hand-painted, that we'd stick up in front of the house. And then we'd have this big old wooden table that my grandpa had built. We'd put the tomatoes out on the table. We had a scale, and we'd sell them for 25 cents a pound. When we were kids, we'd sell tomatoes and these other things to get money for school clothes. It was so awesome to be able to, you know, my older brothers had done it for years, and my sister. It was so awesome to finally, I think I was 7 years old, to finally get in on that and get to participate. But I was a smart kid, but I wasn't quite smart enough to know how to give people change. So they'd hand me a dollar, and I'm like, gee, thanks. Well, you know, it was supposed to be 25 cents a pound, and I didn't understand how to give change. And finally, they'd give up and just let me have the dollar. And then they'd walk off with 1 pound of tomatoes when it was supposed to be a quarter of that. I was so impressed by the experience as a child of finally getting to sell the tomato that I didn't want to quit when it was time to go inside and the sun was going down. And so I got a little cardboard box. I set it out on the parking strip between the curb and the sidewalk. I put a bunch of tomatoes on the cardboard box, and I started saying, tomatoes, 25 cents a pound, tomatoes, 25 cents a pound. And my mom came out and got me and made me go inside. But, you know, that was a cool childhood experience. And unfortunately, by the time I turned 9, that was when we had to quit because there was just too much traffic on our street and there was too much liability. You know, if somebody got hit when they pulled over to buy tomatoes, we didn't want to get sued. So that was something that influenced my life, was just that experience of gardening and selling the tomatoes. Because the gardening was a huge experience for me as a child. That really influenced me as a person, I think.
Share with us a piece of music that's been highly influential in your life.
The Def Leppard song, Two Steps Behind. Interestingly enough, that had a major spiritual influence on my life. And I wrote up a whole blog post on it. It was called How I Found God While Listening to Def Leppard. But the gist of it was that when I was 14 going on 15, I was kind of at a turning point in my life, and I had some changes I needed to make. I had some spiritual growth that I had to do, and I was at this turning point where, you know, I was either going to follow God or I wasn't going to follow God. And I didn't really realize it at the time because I was just going through the motions. I'd go to church every week like I was supposed to, but I really had to commit myself to God. And interestingly enough, I would hear songs on the radio and I would hear messages in the lyrics that I felt like were just for me. And the first song that had that effect on me was Two Steps Behind by Def Leppard, where, you know, it goes, you know, walk away if you want to, you know, you can run, but you can never hide. And when I heard those words, you can run, but you can never hide, it was just like, suddenly I realized, okay, I could run from God, but I couldn't hide from him. And if I was really going to be a committed follower of Jesus Christ, I couldn't hide because God would always be two steps behind. Now, that wasn't what the band intended when they wrote that song, but that's what I heard when I heard it, because that's the effect that it had on me. And then there were other songs that had an effect like that afterwards, like Giving Yourself Away by Rat. Of course, hey, you're giving yourself away. It's written in the tears on your face. I see it through the part that you play. You know, I knew that God knew that I was giving myself away. I couldn't hide my sins from God. I couldn't hide my shortcomings. I couldn't hide anything from God. And, you know, hearing that Rat song on the radio, that's not what Rat meant when they wrote that song, but that's what it meant to me at that time. Those were two songs that influenced my life at a critical point.
Share with us a piece of media that's been highly influential in your life. And this can be another song or a movie, cartoon, just any kind of media.
You know, I would say PBS television and also the National Geographic magazine, especially the National Geographic. Those were some things that really got me interested in science as a kid. And then going into science in college, I majored in biology and wound up as a laboratory professional. And those PBS, the National Geographic, just opened my eyes to the world of science. My grandpa, he had piles and piles of National Geographic magazines. He actually willed them to me when he died, but they're in my brother's basement. I don't have room for them. You know, I've got one little box with just a few of the magazines in it. And I learned so much about the world. I mean, I knew so much about Peru before I went on my church mission there because I learned about it from the National Geographic. Those were the media that really influenced me as a kid, other than music and TV and movies.
All right. Tell us about your passion and why you do it.
Music is always my passion. I love listening to music, even though I'm not particularly an audiophile. But I love collecting music. I love listening to my favorite bands. And it's just had such an influence on me emotionally. But I have more than one thing that I like to do. Like currently, really, my current passion is writing. I'm actually writing a novel. It's kind of a sci-fi genre parody. And it's an experiment because I've never written a novel before, but I'm at the point where I've sent a manuscript into an editor, and I'm hoping that someday I can publish it, you know, self-publish if I can. But I'm doing it because there's a lot of things in pop culture that I grew up with that I think up kind of mashups and jokes in my head. Eventually, I put all those together into a story that hopefully it's a funny story, hopefully something that'll make people laugh. Maybe fans of Mel Brooks, fans of, you know, things where you mix different, you know, maybe a little bit of Douglas Adams, but maybe that's too high of a bar. I can't really reach that high. But people have told me that there's some pretty good books. Like there's one called Ready Player Go that talks about like video games, stuff like that, 80s stuff. There's another one called Red Shirts, but that's kind of the vibe that I'm trying to get with this book that I'm writing, except what I'm writing about, it's kind of a mashup parody of Harry Potter meets X-Files meets Star Trek meets Goonies, and hopefully I'll get it published one day.
All right, well, Mike, what makes you tick?
Just probably my weird imagination. You know, my imagination, I mean, it does good things, it does bad things. Sometimes it does terrible things to me. You know, I've had terrible anxiety attacks set off just by my imagination. But it's a creative part of me, and I don't want to part with it. And hopefully I can make some money off of it eventually.
Well, thanks for being with us.
All righty, and thank you.
All right, so that was Michael Goebel. He lives in Texas, and we just did that over Skype. Speaking of technology, I got a new old stylus for my record player this week. So I'm really, and listeners probably know this, but I'm really into surround sound. And I got especially obsessed with it when I found out they put surround sound on records in the 70s for like an 8 to 10 year period there. And it was all these competing formats, and that's why it died out. Yeah. It was one of those format wars. So I've got all this old technology for being able to play those old records in surround sound. There's one kind, it's called CD4. Which stands for Compatible Disc 4. And technically, you can play it on a stereo record and you listen to it in stereo, right? Yeah. But if you get a special needle that's shaped different, you call it a Shibata needle, and it's skinnier than a normal needle, and it's also shaped a little bit more sharp, more like the groove is shaped.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is it allows it to get in there and pick up really high frequencies. And what they've done is they've taken the rear channels and they've hidden that in a carrier frequency that's at 32,000 hertz, and we can only hear up to about 20,000. Mm. You use a piece of equipment called a demodulator, and that brings it back down into the range of hearing using calculus and electronics. It's basically the same way FM radio works. Mm-hmm. So that's how they do the rear. Actually, what's funny is all the information is actually in the front channels, and then the rear channel is that high for carrier frequency, and they bring it down, but then it's the sum of, so they subtract from the front what's in the rear and then put the extra into the, and it's complicated, but it works. You get surround sound. Anyway, I broke that needle a couple months ago, and they don't actually manufacture them anymore. There's one company in Japan that makes knockoffs, and people are pretty happy with the knockoffs, but they call it bonded diamond. And so it's essentially the same shape, but the old ones from the 70s, they were what they called a nude shibata. And so it's actually just a cut piece of diamond to be that shape instead of however they do it now. And so I really wanted one of the originals.
Yeah.
Because that's what I had, and I was just really sad that it broke. I found a place that sells originals for $260, and I was like, that's a bit too much for me. But I saw one on eBay the other day. Somebody probably didn't realize what they had, and it's an original, and they had to buy it now, so I snagged it.
Great.
So I got that installed last night, and I'm back in business listening to CD4s. Tell us about your other found audio.
Sure. The other one, I was living in Seattle, that's where I grew up, and I had a friend named Katie who loved karaoke. I love karaoke. There was a karaoke place in Bellevue, Washington, where we lived. It was kind of up on the hill, great views out the window of downtown Bellevue, and we'd go in the evenings, and the sun would set, and it was really, really cool. You could bring your own cassette and then record your karaoke sessions, and so we'd go and just have fun and sing in different voices. And so this is Lump by the President of the United States of America.
Now, the funny thing about this is I enjoy this song. There's like two songs from Presidents of the United States of America that I like. This one and Peaches. But this song, the lyrics were always kind of unintelligible to me. And that's how they sing it. And they sound just like the real band. I'm telling you.
Alone in a boggy marsh, totally emotionless except for her heart. Mud flowed up into Lump's pajamas. She's totally confused, all the fires in her honor. She's up, she's up, she's in my head. She's Lump, she's Lump, she's Lump, she might be dead. Lump lingered on. She's love, she's love, she's love, she might be dead.
Brings back lots of fun memories. Yeah.
I loved it. So that's it for us this week. Remember to give us a call. Call us about anything you want to. The number is open 24/7. It just goes straight to message. And it's 801-SKETCH-1. So really easy to remember. It's 801-753-8241. Give us your game stories. Give us funny stories. Give us scary stories. Give us the weirdest thing that ever happened to you. Tell us about your favorite cosplay thing that you did. Just whatever. We just want people to call in, leave a message, and we will feature it on the show. Thanks for coming in, Eric.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.